Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Fi podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington, and we are live here at Camp Fi Rocky Mountain Week 1.5. And it's really exciting. I heard Carl was going to be here, so I was like, I will come and I'll show up and we can record a podcast here together today. And it's been, it's been a while since you've been on, but then you reminded me we recorded like last week, but you used to open the show with something different than what I say. So will you do that?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's the hello world thing.
Oh, hello world. Welcome to Mile High Fi. Was that it?
It was so anticlimactic. I thought it would be like reliving old times, but you don't even remember.
No, it was a long time ago.
That's okay. Well, Carl's here. We're going to talk about cognitive biases. We have about four that we're going to cover. We have a couple other wonderful co-hosts that are going to sit in with us today. So Amberly Grant is here. How are you?
I'm fantastic.
And Kristen Knapp is here as well.
How's Hello, it's great to be here, and oh my gosh, I love Camp Fi Rocky Mountain. It's my favorite.
And I like to have a beer while I record these, so I'm just popping one open, and I think other people have beverages as well, wine and some wine cooler. Carl, what do you have?
Diet Coke.
Okay. Well, that's really good, too. So the four that we're going to cover are recency bias, arrival fallacy, anchoring around the 4% rule and a Fi number, confirmation bias, and the echo chamber effect. Now, Carl, I think we kind of went back and forth on like this idea, but you came up with the outline. Like, what made you pick a couple of these for like the cognitive biases we want to cover?
AI made me pick them because I said to AI, what are the cognitive biases associated with Fi? And it spit out some ideas. And then I honed them down and put them in this outline. But before we get too far into it, Doug, we should explain what one is, because we did not even put that into the outline, and I think Kristen is going to bail us out here.
Oh, right? On definitions? Okay, yeah, let me get my glasses
just
on.
What a cognitive bias is in the first place.
Yes, like, well, no. I just did the definition for confirmation bias, which is number four.
Okay.
So you might want me to hold that until we get to number four. Cognitive biases, I can Google right now.
Yeah.
Stand by.
Anybody want to take a stab at defining it without looking at anything?
Sure. I like to say yes. Courage. Cognitive biases. So these are different ways that you can see the world based on how you've already seen it in the past. And so you project into the future what that will look like in different, whether that's confirmation or recency. So like things that have happened recently or confirmation, you have evidence from the past. So therefore you think that evidence will continue in the future. So that's my guess.
I will tell you what Wikipedia says. A cognitive bias is a systematic error in thinking and judgment. Your brain relies on mental shortcuts to process millions of daily inputs quickly, which can sometimes result in irrational decisions, distorted perceptions, and flawed reasoning. It says understanding these subconscious patterns is crucial for recognizing why we sometimes draw the wrong conclusions in financial, medical, and personal decisions.
So basically, we're going to tell people everything that's what's wrong with them.
Yeah. And I think like another way to think of it, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, it kind of explains why we would maybe make a bad decision, even if we were seeing that in someone else. We're like, that's clearly a bad decision, but we don't see our own blind spots.
Yeah.
Fair.
There's some overlap. Good.
And I'll just say this last thing, which is in university, we all learn economics, right? And that we are rational human beings. And I think this shows that we are not rational. And so behavioral economics and other things are actually a much better field of study when we're thinking of individuals and how we make decisions.
Perfect. I thought your cold definition was pretty good. I wouldn't believed it. You're confident.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Carl, you want to kick off like the recency bias, and you have a few thoughts around this, right?
Yeah, our first one is recency bias, and this one is basically our thoughts are guided by what we've experienced recently, hence the definition. But where it comes into play with the fire community is, I was looking this up, and during the past 15 years, Kristen, do you have a, you can see my screen.
I know, I already seen it. Make Amberly guess.
Amberly, do you have a guess of what the average return with dividend reinvestment of the S&P 500 was annualized for the past 15 years? What did every year return?
I'll just guess 12.5%.
Yeah, it was actually 14.2%.
Wow.
So we've lived, I don't know if there's ever been a period better than this. We've lived in this golden age and we're used to that. So we really haven't experienced much pain. We had a little V-shaped depression during COVID where it crashed 30%, but then quickly came back up. So all of us are living in kind of, what's the word I'm looking for, Doug? Like, I think we're probably, a lot of us are probably falsely overconfident because everything has been so good.
Did you not experience a pain though in 2008, or you just don't remember it?
I did experience pain and I reacted very badly in 2008, but it was so long ago. Again, that was, well, how many years ago was that?
Right.
It was 20 years ago, 18 years ago.
Yeah. What did you do that was so bad?
Yeah, what did you do?
I stopped, the market started to crash and I stopped contributing to my 401k. So one of my favorite investing quotes of all time is from Warren Buffett. He said, the stock market is the only store where people rush for the exits when it goes on sale. And that's exactly what I did. The best time ever I should have been investing, I completely stopped. Yeah, that was not good.
Yep. And I did exactly the same thing. I think maybe I just cut down how much I was investing. But like you said, it would have been the best time to keep investing and like double down. But yeah, I was like, the returns have been horrible for the last 8 years, which is recency bias in the other way, because I was like, it's been shitty. Mm-hmm. It's probably going to keep being shitty.
So I think the problem here is that because of this, maybe people use a higher number when they're doing their projections. I don't think I do. I mean, I'd be curious as to what you guys use. I use
8%.
8%.
7%.
Okay.
Doug?
Yep. And I think we use 4.93.
What?
So everyone's like, what the? So like, we went to an advisor and like generally CFP is out there. Do advisors typically use something much lower than standard?
Depends on the advisor.
Okay. So ours does. And yeah. So we're looking at that. When I do my shorthand, 8% though.
Carl?
I have no number. We play it by ear. We wing it, which probably isn't great, but.
Gotcha. Okay. Any observations on recency bias? What do you think, Amberly?
Well, I am younger than this panel. and
you're about 10 years younger, right?
I don't know.
Me.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
Are we saying how old we are on air? You go
we
first.
We don't have to.
Okay.
No, we don't have to.
Okay. I'm 38. And so I've only really, well, I've lived as in like, what, 2008 was, I graduated high school in 2007. So then 2008 happened. Mm. And I remember it, but it had no effect on me because I had actually invested money in the market, but I didn't know anything about it. So. And I didn't invest for many years later. So it really wasn't anything interesting to me. So I've only been on this bull run from the time that I started investing.
Okay.
But I actually don't. I'll just say that my 7% that I use could or could not be a good number. But I think it's not bad because I don't necessarily think that the market's going to continue to return this amount. I just feel like I live in a lucky golden age at this time that I was able to capture some of it, because not a lot of it, actually. I think I just feel grateful, but I don't anticipate this necessarily being the thing that moves forward.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
One thing that I've seen is maybe people have too much in their equities, because we have seen them just keep growing. Everything's great. And actually, I was recording with Pete, Mr. Money Mustache, recently. And I mean, I don't think he or you, Carl, have much cash on hand. You guys are like mostly equities, not much on bonds. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay. And it's like, it can be fine if you've oversaved, but if there's some correction and you're kind of on the edge, if you don't have any bonds or any cash, then you may have to go back to work, which might not be a big deal. Like, we're flexible. You can go back to work. Mm-hmm. But if you're like, oh yeah, everything's been awesome, people are telling me, just be positive, like be optimistic. The market just keeps going up. Well, I mean, it could be like 2 or 3 years where there's a recession. And I'm not saying I'm pessimistic or anything, but like if the consequence is going back to work, then you have to figure out if that's worth it to you. So what do you think, Carl, as someone who has mostly equities?
Like, what would you do if the market dropped like 40% tomorrow? What are you doing? You're okay selling into a down market because you've oversaved so much? That's okay?
Yeah, we'd be okay with it. But actually, we talked to financial advisors a couple weeks ago, and we are starting to move more things into cash. Gives me, we have big spending years with two kids in school soon, so we are moving more to
cash. Is there a percentage you're aiming for? In cash?
Probably 5%.
Okay.
So,
yeah. I'm curious on this one on real estate, because I do think that recency bias in the real estate world is much more impactful in a short term. So we had a massive run-up in real estate since 2008, and young people getting in thinking that 20% over year over year appreciation is normal. And I think a lot of people are getting caught right now in that, I don't want to say it's a bubble, but in that issue. And I see it because I'm part of the real estate investing community in Denver, and Denver itself has gone down 20%. Rents have gone down 20%. And they bought 2 years ago with these short-term rental ideas and all this stuff. And I'm seeing that play out, I think, in my world, in my generation, very much in real estate.
Perfect example.
Yeah.
I don't dabble in any real estate. I have no thoughts. Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
No.
No, it makes sense. It totally makes sense. Yeah, and then Kristen, anything with a recency bias?
No, but we're all very fortunate as to what we've been able to experience the last, since 08 we've been on this run?
What, yes.
When did it start? 08?
I think 2010.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
2010? 08 was the bottom.
Okay,
probably.
So 16 years at least? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're pretty fortunate individuals.
Yeah, very fortunate.
There were a couple of hiccups.
I have a question then. If we are very fortunate, and when we're talking about this, you're using a 4.92, and we're talking, do you actually have any connection to a possible recession? But it sounds like both of you would not actually be affected whatsoever. I would be affected. Going back to work is probably not an option during a recession anyways, because jobs are probably not prevalent. And even out of the workforce, and no one's quitting their job at that time. So do you actually think that you're affected? And is this does you have any emotional attachment to this?
No, not too much. I don't think I wouldn't be too impacted. It's more of a thought exercise. But yeah, to your point, we use something so conservative that it wouldn't really matter.
Mm-hmm. I'm still working, so I haven't moved it around like this quite yet, but my plan is to have roughly maybe 70% in equities, maybe 20% in bonds, 10% in cash, so that if we got into a down market, we would have the cash and bonds to live off of for quite some time before we'd ever have to sell into a down market. That's my plan.
But we've
got right at the right amount, not oversaved. It sounds like if you're oversaved, you don't have to worry about it as much.
Okay. Right.
And bear in mind, my wife would answer completely different than me.
Yeah,
so
totally.
And can you elaborate?
If there was a big recession, she would probably be like, maybe we're going back to work. And I'm like, I don't think so. I don't think so. But she would be like, maybe we should.
And then that's when you call your advisor and say, please tell Elizabeth where we're at.
Right. Yeah. And that is part of the strategy of having an advisor. There's an intermediary. There's at least two sane people. I won't say which two are sane, but at least two sane people, and she would also describe that differently as well. But the advisor has been good, and we've met in the middle through those negotiations.
Can I ask another question?
Yeah, this is great. That's why you're here.
Would you guys ever, you wouldn't need to, but let's just do this thought experiment yet again, and we're going to add, would you ever then move to maybe a lower cost of living area to allow yourself more time? Is that something that you felt comfortable doing? And that might be country and or part of this, other country or part of our
country? That's a hardcore yes for me, all day, every day, just because I want to do that anyway, right? So it would give me a great excuse to go live in some exotic place for a while, right? Yeah,
and just
totally.
Piece it out on a beach for a little while and see what happens.
Yeah, send me to Thailand for a few years. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Mississippi.
Well,
nobody's from Mississippi.
I actually lived there for a few years. I'm good on Mississippi, but maybe Portugal.
Exotically.
What would you do?
Yeah, I think that's, we've considered doing that as well, spending time in other parts of the world, and that'd be a great excuse to do it, although I would not want to be forced into doing it, but why not?
Yeah, definitely an option. I mean, that's one of the things that we would be flexible on.
Yeah, is location.
Yeah, for sure.
Because you have to do that, right? If something were to happen in the future, flexibility will be the thing that gets you through it the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how about you?
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah. and you do some travel anyway, right?
Oh, yeah.
With long-term overseas. Do you want to share a quick example?
Well, I'm Canadian. So if the U.S. goes to shit and Canada's still okay, I'll just hop up there. But although my Canadian dollar may not, or my American dollar may not go far. I'm also very happy to live abroad, maybe work on my Scottish citizenship at that time or something. Like the world is a very open and inviting place in my mind and how I've experienced it. So I would be happy to review it. Mm-hmm. Check it out.
All right. I think we're ready to move on to number two, which is arrival fallacy. And Carl, I think you thought long and hard about this one, right?
Yeah, this is one. I actually went to not ChatGPT, but ChatGTP-PEE. And this is called the arrival or white asparagus fallacy. Have you heard of that term before?
No, I haven't. Okay, I've heard of white asparagus, though.
Yeah. Okay. So this basically is we assign too much value to something because it's harder to get, like the grass is greener on the other side. And what I discovered in my ChatGTP research is a lot of people think white asparagus doesn't make your pee smell. So a lot of people want it, but that's not actually true. I guess like it's in Germany, right? You can find white asparagus.
Did you say somebody sent you some? Did you try it? Did you experiment?
It is a delicacy.
I don't think I've opened it. Like Darren and Jolene gave us that tin. Hopefully it's got a long
experience. But we have a surprise. Everybody reach under your seat.
But how this plays out in the FI community is a lot of people build financial independence up to this huge thing. I can't wait to hit my number. And then you hit your number and it's like, this is exactly like yesterday and tomorrow will probably be the same, except we've hit this magical kind of fake number in our head. Do you remember when you hit your number, Doug? Or?
No, I have no idea.
Exactly. Anticlimactic. Yeah. It's like,
and I think, well, I do want to go back. How did they make the asparagus white?
I do know how they do this. They pile dirt around it. So the poor asparagus is never exposed to sunlight. It's like fungus. Okay. So it never develops chlorophyll.
It's in the dark
its whole life. And I've never actually had it. Have you?
No. And I was talking to Big Ern Karsten, and he was like, yeah, it is a delicacy in Germany. That's what we talked about.
Okay, so,
funny enough. Yeah.
So Amberly Kristen, have you ever had the mythical
never
white asparagus?
Ever.
Amberly's like, why did I agree to this shit?
Terrible thoughts going through my head. And I can't say them out loud, but I really want to, and I'm not doing it on air, but you guys can come ask me what it was later.
Okay. That sounds funny. Once we hit stop, you can share it with the room. Uh-huh. Over here. Uh-huh. Must be really funny.
Oh, it's dark.
Okay. The thing is, I don't remember when I hit my number. Again, we, like with Elizabeth and I...
For you guys who are listening, Amberly is dabbing her eyes because
she's crying.
She's crying.
So, yeah, it was anticlimactic because I don't think we had like a specific number. I was like, hey, I think we're pretty good, but we never really agreed on our exact expenses. And then the market always looked inflated for the last like 8 years. So we're like, oh, the market's at an all-time high. Maybe it'll correct down. I see people nodding like, oh, yeah, like we were all experiencing it. It didn't... Yeah, it was not a thing. But I was going to say, you did a few talks. Essentially, it was like once you hit FI and you retired, you were just the same dude. You just didn't have to go to work the next Monday or whatever, right?
Yeah, if anything, it was kind of depressing because you learn that where happiness comes from, and it's not this external circumstance. It's your internal scorecard and not this big number. So, yeah, I'm like, I thought foolishly, because I'm a fool, that this number would make me happy for whatever reason. And it may be like 0.05% happier, but then you learn that you have to sort out your own shit and work on yourself to find your happiness.
I have to say, in the last few years, you guys and other people in the community have been talking more about this, that this, you're not just going to hit the number and all of a sudden like life is amazing overnight, right? And I'm so appreciative that the focus has shifted to that in the last few years. And you know, some people say you don't have to retire to something, but there is some people who say you do, some people you don't. But this is something I thought a lot about. So when I moved to part-time work, I was very intentional about the things I wanted to try and the things I wanted to experiment with. And I feel like I've really been able to build this incredible life for myself before I completely quit, right? And I'm just so grateful that these conversations by you guys and others have been had so that we can all be thinking about this and preparing and building our great life before we get there.
Yeah, it kind of seems like an extension of financial independence because you look what happened here. An attendee was just saying, I didn't quite expect the presentations here, they were all about maybe psychology and mental state, fixing yourself and going through your problems. But I think that's maybe the next logical step. One of the attendees, Amy, gave a great presentation on fixing yourself. Yeah, that was it.
Go the F to therapy.
Go the F to therapy. Yeah. No one hit me hard, at least. I don't know how the rest of y'all felt about it, but yes. Money will not fix your past problems. Although you can pay to fix it.
No, yeah, I think even then you still have to do some self-work, though, yeah. Right? Right? Yeah, even with all the money in the world, you still have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I made a couple notes on this. I prepared lightly before some of the episodes. So you'll never feel how you expect once you reach the goal. You have to be content and satisfied along the way. I did note an exception. So if you really dislike your job or something related, like sitting in traffic for a few hours and you're able to quit your job, maybe you don't like wearing pants all day or something like that. That was kind of Carl's deal. Yeah. But then if you remove the negative, you'll actually be happier. So when I got laid off, but like when I stopped working, it was awesome. And I became self-employed, so it was something different. But generally, once you reach a goal, even something big that you've been working on for a long time, after a couple days, usually you're like, all right, what's the next thing I'm working on? That was fine. You get used to it immediately, and you're just used to not wearing pants. And then it's just normal. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Wherever you go, there you are.
Yeah.
Do you have any suggestions, Doug? And this could be a whole podcast series in itself, but how do you, I mean, this is really asking what is the key to happiness? Like, how do people combat this? And I think the quick and easy answer is it's a journey. It's not, life should be a consistent journey and not a goal, because a goal is one tiny point in time. You reach it, and then what's next? So the real joy in life is in the journey and the challenges and everything. Sorry, I kind of tried to answer my own question, but what do you think, Doug?
I agree with you. I think low expectations are super helpful, which is kind of I think it's true. Like, the other part is life is a series of problems to solve. Like, yeah. So I just rented the camper van and I went to go pick it up, but the directions were wrong. So it was trying to lead me out to a fucking field. So I'm like driving and I'm like, this is a gravel road. And then it was wrong again. The backup camera stopped, or the reverse camera stopped. Anyway, it was a series of little problems. And it eventually added up. So I was frustrated. I'm usually pretty chill, but I was like, man, I could not get a break here. And then not quite long enough for me to lay on my back all the way. So it's like right at 5:10. So in the middle of the night last night, I was like, not a mild panic attack. I was just like, am I going to be able to sleep in here? Like, this is a little rough. I was looking forward to this camper van thing. So all that to say, that was completely a situation I put myself into. I was looking forward to it, and it was just a series of problems. Once I made it on the other side, everything was fine. It's cool. I should be able to sleep a little better tonight. But low expectations really help.
on this topic of like happiness, and I would really like to know if you guys agree with me here, but I feel like you really have to put in some intentional work to like truly find the things that make you happy, that bring you joy. Like, they might not just show up. You kind of have to do some experimentation. This is how I feel. Thoughts on that?
So I'm going to turn this back around on you two real quick. Amberly and Kristen, you both are community builders. You with Amberly with FinTalks and your travel, FinTalks Cruises, and you with Five Friends Travel. Is that what you're working at for happiness?
Like, yes.
And you're both kind of at the same place where you both have conventional jobs, but you're kind of, you're doing other things
too. My favorite like thing in the world. I love to plan travel, read about travel, go on travel, travel with friends, like anything around travel. Like, I love all of it. And I love the planning part of it. A lot of people don't like that, right? So I was already doing that with smaller groups of friends. My husband doesn't like to travel as much. Just go with your friends. I'm like, okay. So this is just a way to do more of that. And in this case, for me, more is better. Because when I went to part-time work 2 years ago, that's what I wanted to do, is travel more, right? So this allows me to do that with like the best people in the world. So I am living my best life. Like, I cannot even begin. I'm happier than I've ever been in my life. like, hopefully the shoe doesn't drop tomorrow, but right now everything's fantastic. And a lot of it has to do with, honestly, it all goes back to just this community, though. It would have never occurred to me to move to part-time or have the confidence to do it if it wasn't for this community. And then it was the encouragement of people of the community that I did this, because I had this little idea, but it was the people behind it who was like, yeah, do it. We'll support you. Awesome. I think it's a great idea. Mark Chalman, one of those people. Yeah, there's a lot of people in this room are like, you got to do that. So this community is 100% the reason why. But but I knew that I loved to travel. I just wanted to do more. So that's kind of how my thing came about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is studies on happiness, right? The idea of happiness itself is normally a baseline. So that's what they think. There's a genetic and environmental aspect of happiness. You can win the lottery and then you come back to this baseline. You can lose a leg and you come back to this baseline. And there's only a few ways that you can actually increase the baseline of your happiness. And one of those is community. Like, having people around is one of the ways that you can engage with others in a meaningful way, is a way to do that, as well as gratitude. And to speak to your comment, community and meaningful community is an incredible way to be more happy. And it's why my talk today was how to build community even stronger by, like, working through things, because we are all existing in this community. And I think this community will thrive and get better as we work on ourselves. Hence why there's this theme of this weekend, it turns out, right? There's always new ways of phi. And just to speak to myself, mine comes from, like, my happiness. I think I have a very high baseline ultimately, but my happiness comes in travel, seeking out new communities, new experiences, doing hard things, being courageous. And I feel like all those little things over and over again are just making my life, like, very fulfilling. And that's different than happiness, but
I don't know. Similar, I think, or different? Fulfillment's almost more important, I think. Yeah. Fulfillment, yeah. Contentment. No.
Yeah. And I was going to say, yeah, there's definitely maybe a semantic argument with, like, happiness, like, being satisfied, contentment, fulfillment. So, like, they're a little different. It's hard to be, like, happy all the time.
Right.
But you could be content and satisfied. Do you differentiate? Is that, like, kind of interchangeable, or how do you think of it, Kristen?
I don't know how to answer that. I'm not sure. I'd have to prepare something, and I have not prepared anything.
What about you, Carl? What do you think?
I think, to what Amberly said, I think contentment is probably closer to that baseline level of happiness. I think happiness or joy are short-term spikes, and it's good to have those things, but you can't live in a permanent sense of, like, extreme happiness or joy. It would just get old and become like anything else. So
you wouldn't appreciate it if you felt like that all the time.
So
right?
I think the real goal is contentment, fulfillment, whatever that means to you. How do you get that in your life, Doug? I think you're a little bit different from us.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on.
Can you turn up?
What do you meant by that?
No. But, like, Doug likes to sit in his basement and play guitar, right? And
I enjoy that. Yeah, this is, I would have to think a little bit too, but I was going to say I think about times when I get into, like, a flow state, specifically where I lose track of time. Mm-hmm. So one is playing guitar. One's playing guitar with someone, like, I play with Tyler, and he plays the drums, and we'll essentially, like, black out for, like, 3 hours. And then we're like, oh, our time's up. We have to leave the studio space. Another is cooking. So I could, like, chop veggies and cook, and, like, hours will go by. And
what about this?
It's a blast. This is rough. I'm watching the time here. It's going by so slow. And this is, like, a community / socialization thing, which is really fun, which is why I do the podcast at all. So, yeah, and when you were talking, Carl, like, it made me think, because you were like, if everything is always good, and, like, you get that baseline sort of happiness, and it's not novel anymore. Is that kind of what you were?
Yeah, it's like people post all this glorious crap on Instagram, like, life isn't lived on an Instagram reel or page.
Yeah, and then, like, the hedonic treadmill, and it made me think of, like, how you opened this, which is white asparagus. And the thing is, like, if everything made your pee smell, who cares, right? It doesn't even matter. That did not land, like, at all. That's okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you're surprised. You're like, whoa, what happened? And then you're like, oh, yeah, I had asparagus at dinner, which Carl and I, we had dinner the other night, And we ordered independently, right? Like, we didn't know what we were getting. We looked, he was like, hey, Doug, look, I got asparagus on here. I didn't even know it was going to come. And then my food came out, and mine also had it, and I didn't know it either. Yeah. It was random, and I texted you later. Yeah. When
we're cosmically connected by asparagus, I guess.
It's crazy.
Touch my asparagus. What's that, Michelangelo, the Sistine Chapel? We just recreated that. I don't know who's God and who's...
All right. Okay, so arrival fallacy. When you retire, you may or may not like it. Is that the summary? All right. Any other thoughts on that one?
No.
Okay, that was a great summary. Okay, next is anchoring. And we were kind of thinking of the 4% rule, which is it's a good guideline for accumulation, but there's a lot of debate about it anyway. Potentially, you could anchor to your like FI number. Like if you have something in your mind that you thought of like years ago, and then you're like, all right, as soon as I hit X amount, I'll be there. But maybe your math should change because of some other aspect. So, Carl, you want to hit some of the details on this one?
Well, I mean, there's all kinds of different versions of anchoring, but the one I get stuck on is like still the prices of stuff. Like I'll go to our local grocery chain, King Supers, and I'll be, what I should be doing is looking at the quality of the food I'm purchasing instead of the cost per ounce. Like I was taught when I was 15 in consumer education to look at the price per ounce. And why am I still looking at that? I should be looking at the quality of the food or the taste of it. Like enjoy your stupid food and just trying to race to the bottom of it. So, it's hard to change, and I think that's one of the keys to... I think we're getting better at that. Like, what you two are doing is a great example, but these semi-exotic trips with friends are great. We're finally learning to let go of our money, but it's difficult because if you think of it, the same thing that caused us to retire serves us poorly in actual retirement. Well, hopefully, we've done well, we've saved money, and now we can actually let it rip a little bit. A lot of us, especially me, do not evolve successfully in that way. Hey, do you have any examples of this, Doug, where you still are cheap or silly with purchases?
Can I ask first? Why haven't you evolved?
Well, that's a great question. I guess just inertia or momentum. I think I've gotten better at it. It's outside your comfort zone, I think.
Are you afraid? Like, who will you be if you do this?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. You don't want to be... I've always thought money is a precious resource, probably overweighted it, especially now. Like money was, this goes back to Amy and psychological trauma. Money is security to me. Yep. Therefore, I cling to it like Linus's blanket, another Amy reference. So, yeah, I need some more therapy to money. It goes deep.
But you're practicing. You're working on doing better.
I mean, half of it is identifying your shit, and then only then can you improve. But
something we were talking about today, we were having a conversation about withdrawal strategies, and it was like, you know, you could start with like 4%, but then 10 years later when you're, you know, despite spending, your portfolio is like doubled or tripled, like maybe you need to do 4% of that new number. Like, have you done stuff like that? Yeah. Do you reassess, like, wow, we've been spending, but our portfolio continues to grow. We need to spend more every year. Are you adjusting?
Yeah. Well, I guess one exercise goes back to you, Kristen, because Japan is probably number one on my international bucket list. And then I heard you were planning the trip. I just fist bumped Kristen for those listening. And I had an idea of what it was going to cost. And I thought it would be, it's not cheaper going all the way to Japan. It's 10 days. It's going to be a very luxurious trip. And I don't think it's super pricey, but it will be the most expensive vacation we've ever done.
Wow.
So I'm like taking it back very, very slightly, but I didn't have any hesitation about purchasing it, but still it was a little bit.
But you're taking the whole family of four, and that's part of why it's so expensive, because it's times four.
Yeah. And then my partner is trying to further expand my comfort zone. She's like, we should go first class.
Oh, you should. Wait, yes, tell me on that. Okay, have you ever flown business class?
One time, for your past trip we did.
To Amsterdam.
But we did the bid, we got it for like $400, like miraculously, The lay flat seats.
Yeah.
I watched like Dune and Dune 2 on the same flight. Yeah, the little ice cream sundae that comes out.
Like, okay, but was it life-changing? I mean, do you feel like you're going to not be able to go backwards now?
No, I don't. I think it's overrated, actually.
Really?
Yeah. But part of that's because I can't sleep on a plane, even if laying flat.
Yeah, how about that? Mindy flies up front. You can fly in the back. The girls can be up front with Mindy.
It's funny you mention that because Mindy had that exact same suggestion. But I mean, first round trip to Japan. Here I go again with money. It's a lot of money.
Well, you can set up trackers to see when the price goes down and maybe feel a little better about it.
Who cares about trackers? Can I challenge this?
Please. Yeah.
Is it actually a lot of money to you?
Yeah.
Based on real numbers, is it
based
a lot
on a
of
percentage
money?
Of your net worth, Carl?
See, this feels weird to say, but no, probably not.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to tell you from my perspective. I would support, love, respect, enjoy you more if you could go into that and enjoy that experience and talk about it as if like, whoa, I get this exciting privilege that most people never get, gratitude, right? To be able to do this thing and not have to fight my partner. She wants to do this thing. Yeah. Why do I have to fight her for this? Why don't I just give in and say yes?
Okay.
I'm curious, how would you change? And would that be a big problem?
Yeah, I think so. Do you have a therapist license? I don't think I even care about
my third career.
Yeah. Well, we're trying to expand. Like one thing, I just talked to you about this a month ago. I'm like, how could we use our money for happiness? And I said this, if anyone was in the session yesterday with Darren and Jolene, like I want to have, well, I talked about a house and sharing with people, but I want to plan like an epic trip. Maybe I was going to talk to Mark about this, like St. Bart's. Let's just rent something and invite a bunch of people
big
we
house.
Love and care about.
Big villa on the ocean,
yeah, yeah.
Right?
And the only rule is people cannot give me any money for it. So I'm
That's
trying.
A great rule.
I've taken over this thing.
Sign me up.
Someone else should talk.
Good for you.
Thank you, Amberly, though. I appreciate that.
You should go for it. Wait, let's put Carl. Will you consider this? Just pulling the trigger and doing it.
The well, St. Bart's house?
No, both. Okay, both. But I'm referring to Japan.
Okay.
I want you to look at how much it would cost to fly your family of four to Japan, first class.
I did last night.
Well, are you looking at business class or first class? Because business class is pretty great, too.
I don't know. The Polaris, whatever the
those are really,
seats are.
Yeah. There's different levels. But but math out, like, what percentage of that is of your net worth? Mm. And, like, is it really going to change things for me? Like, maybe do that exercise.
Okay.
And see where you land and hit me up next week and let me know.
do I have to fly the kids or could I put them back in coach? Or?
Oh, yeah, they can put them in coach. It's fine.
Yeah, I think that's okay. They
can earn their...
They're pretty mature gals. Yeah. They can handle it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't spoil them like this because then when they're on their own and they can't afford it, they're going to be like, oh, man, it sucks so bad. Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that.
You can if you want to, if it's a choice to be generous. And I think that's a good communication. This is not a normal thing. I want to be generous and... So therefore, you are up here with us.
Yeah. One real other quick comment I'll make about the FI community, and this goes back to what Amberly just said, is I've met several people who will give you like honest criticism, even if it hurts a little bit, which I really appreciate. Ellen Donegan was another one. He's like, dude, you're not good at eye contact. Like, you need, what's wrong with you? I'm like,
do you want to share an example?
Right. Well, that was one of them.
Like,
do you
want
to share another example?
Oh, man. No, do you have one in mind that I'm not thinking of?
No, just curious.
Okay. I don't know. I'm sure there's a lot.
You're doing a great job.
Yeah. Okay, that was a good one.
Yeah, what was the question? Man, the Carl bias.
Yeah. So for me, yeah, sometimes I look how much cheese costs. And that's how you opened it. You were like, look at the ounces of the cost per cheese.
Yeah.
So I still do that. It's a habit.
How much does asparagus cost? Have you looked at that?
You know what? It's not too bad. Veggies are not too bad. I have gotten away from this. So, Kristen, to your point earlier, because of all the discussion and acknowledgement of like ultra frugality, which got us to a wonderful place. I think a lot of people have some frugal roots or like we get a little pride about like getting a good deal. Like I think even when you talked about the first or whatever, the business class ticket, you were like, it was only $400 or whatever, right?
Yep.
And it's like, who gives a shit how much it costs, right? Like you upgraded, but I do the same thing. Like you were over the other day and I was like, I bought this guitar and I got a good deal. And it's just like a thing that we do. And because of the acknowledgement, I have been like, all right, I'm going to like order the steak that I would like to order, which was the filet just the other day. And I think I even encouraged my, like Mark was like, I think I'm gonna get the filet.
Yeah.
And then there's, it's like Oscar style, which comes
crab?
With, yeah, hollandaise and crab. Yeah, so I was like, I will do that also. And that was where the bonus asparagus came in. So yeah, I think like I'm thinking about it now, and to your point, Kristen, because we go to the advisor each year, it's like, oh, like you underspent last year and the portfolio grew. You can increase your budget by X amount. So he is tracking it, and he's like, you could spend more. So, and we're not close to that. I mean, and we're doing like all the stuff we want. So to your point, Carl, like it's hard to like turn the knob and like be able to just all of a sudden be like, oh yeah, this is okay. Mm-hmm. We're price anchored at like certain flight cost or whatever. So
one bad behavior I catch myself, and I'd be curious to hear from the audience and Amberly and Kristen too, is I catch myself saying things like, I ordered a steak, but, and then I have to mention the price of it and like try to justify it, but can't, like, when's the last time you've bought something big and not just say, hey, I did this and didn't mention the price?
You're right.
Because
I'm usually like, I bought this, but I got this great deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. When people, you know, working on air, I have to have kind of an extensive wardrobe. And when people will compliment me on a dress, I'm like, oh, yeah, I got it on Amazon for $35. Mm. Like, it's almost by my immediate response. Help. Yeah. I don't know how to turn that off.
And it's probably not healthy either.
Probably not. Like, I probably should just say thank you, but it's very hard.
Yeah. Very hard.
Amberly, do you have any anything to share? And you leave Carl alone.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I actually wanted to defend Carl in one thing, which is I sometimes think about this, right? Because I also do the thing where I say how much something costs. And I wonder if it's just for fucking nosy, man. Right? Like, I just want to know how much things are, too. And is that a money trauma thing, or is that just like a curiosity thing? And so I want to say that it's not always bad to mention a price unless you are justifying it to yourself or trying to justify it to someone else. So if you're saying, this dress, someone complimented this dress, I can't take a compliment. So one of the ways I'm going to deflect the compliment is just being like, but it costs $35, so that's okay that I can wear this nice dress. Then I think that's something you need to work on. Thank you. I appreciate the compliment, right? But if you're like, oh, this is a cool thing that not a lot of people buy or do, sometimes throwing in a number in there helps people to understand maybe the level of what you just did or bought or whatever it might be. And so I have a little bit of like a love-hate with this.
Mm-hmm. I still get very proud of myself when I get a good deal. And I shouldn't. I mean, why? Why do we still do that?
I don't know. Well, I was going to say, part of it, like with the guitar specifically, part of it is like the hunt. Mm-hmm. And like I'm negotiating with people, so that's kind of fun. So it's a little, like, it is different. But I mean, like, you were like, oh, I found something good, and I like it, and other people like it. So I kind of understand it on that aspect.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. All right. Carl, anything else on the anchoring? You had a few other notes, but I'm not...
I was having a conversation where before this is similar, where I've got a friend who lives, he listens to this podcast too, so we might not be friends
after
he listens
to this, but
he'll know who he is. Yeah. And he'll think this is funny, but because he made fun of himself. He lives in one of the nicest parts of town. His house is probably worth close to $2 million. And I was talking to him. He's like, you know what? We keep our heat at 55 in the winter. And I find it hard to work because my hands get so cold and I can't type with gloves. And I've heard similar things with air conditioning. Some of the other wealthiest people I know live in Florida. And they're like, yeah, we won't turn our air conditioning on. I'm like, this would be like 0.0001%, 0.1% of your net worth. You haven't evolved correctly.
Did you call him on it? Did you say, that's nuts, man?
Yeah, I did. I said, what the hell's wrong with you?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. You work for... Yeah, I'm not going to say it. I don't want to spring.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Very, very successful individual.
Wow.
One of the most successful people I know. And yeah, you won't turn on the heat. But yeah, how do you have the $2 million house, but you won't turn the heat on? I don't know how you reconcile that in your head.
I don't
head.
Either.
It's some kind of weird trauma thing. Amberly probably has a great answer for us.
Yeah. What did you say to that person?
Oh, well, I mean, that's just, there's disordered eating, there's disordered thinking, and there's disordered spending. And that's a disordered spending, especially when it's your every single moment of your life, when you're like there and I know that feeling, you're hunched over and you're cold. And I'll just say this, from one very poor person growing up, we kept our heat in Ottawa between 50 and 55 because it was oil-based heat. Like, you had to put like a big oil. My dad had $500 at the beginning. I'm going to cry. $500 at the beginning of winter, and we had to make it last. So my privilege in life now is to have any temperature I want in my house because I was forced to, like, live in perpetual freezing cold weather. And getting out of showers in, like, 50 degrees is terrible. So to this person, I'd love for you to honor other people who do not get the privilege of enjoying air conditioning or heat the way that you can, and, like, just fucking live that life up, man. Because being forced to be there is a very different feeling than choosing it.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, my parents, interestingly enough, had the same hack. We lived in Chicago, and they would turn off the heat at night. Like, I'd be able to see my breath in the house. And but my parents had an electric blanket. I'm like, hey, Mom. It's, I remember this conversation like it was yesterday. I'm like, hey, Mom, I'm really cold. It's hard to sleep. Can I get one of those, like, magic blankets, too? And I'm like, no, they cause cancer, so we don't want to give you kids one. I'm like, you have one? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Now I like to sleep in the cold.
All right. I think we'll come up to our last one here, and that's confirmation bias and a related echo chamber effect. So Kristen did a lot of homework up front. We sent the outline like 10 minutes before we started. We're really happy they sat up here with us. But Kristen, can you tell us what this is?
So confirmation bias, the unconscious tendency to seek, interpret, and remember information that aligns with your existing beliefs while ignoring or discrediting evidence that contradicts them. This can lead to overconfidence and false beliefs and hinder objective critical thinking. And it frequently results in echo chambers, stalled decision making, and profound social or political polarization. So just as a little curiosity test here, a little experiment, because I've done this and I'm embarrassed, but of the people in this room, how many of you who happen to be on some sort of social media, Facebook, whatever it might be, have maybe unfollowed or unfriended people who have other political leanings and talk frequently about them and you just don't want to see their stuff? Okay. So it's like more than half of the room. Yeah. And I've done that. And I think because of that, like, I don't want to see it, but at the same time, it's like, it would probably behoove all of us to hear their perspective, right? So how to overcome it? This is something that I read about earlier too, is, you know, this is an innate human trait, so we can't really blame ourselves, I suppose, but you can mitigate this by practicing actively seeking disconfirming evidence. So ask yourself, what facts or sources could prove me wrong? And diversify your sources, engage with credible, differing viewpoints. So I have been experimenting with watching different news channels just to kind of see what some of the other points are out there. But it gets me just really mad, and then I turn off the TV. But anyway, what are your all's thoughts on this?
Do you think we're living in one of these echo chambers, like right here, right now?
Yes. Yes. Everybody in the audience just sort of said yes and shake their head. Yeah. Okay. Because for better or for worse, I have found that over the years, as I've continued to, you know, fall in love with this community and go to more things, that a lot of my other friendships have fallen by the wayside because this is who I choose to spend my time with. This is who I enjoy the most. And we all share the same beliefs, and maybe, I don't know, but I like it that way, you know, but my brain is telling me that I probably shouldn't do that, but I like it. You know, what is one to do?
Do you think it harms us in any way, like living? Well, like, I think the same thing almost. I still have some pre-Phi people. What is that, like PF? I'm thinking about BC. Before Phi people, I still have a couple of friends from them, but I can't remember. I haven't seen one of them this year.
Like, right?
Do you think it holds us back in any way?
I don't know what I think. I just know that it seems like people who are smarter than me says that it's not a good thing. But I like it. I like not reading those other viewpoints because they make me angry. But maybe that's okay because maybe we need to be challenged. It's just hard.
I'll jump in. So you specifically mentioned social media, which I think is like...
the devil.
Potentially, like, it's not a good metric. But I think like having diverse sets of friends and different like subcultures, like we're a little subculture, similar to Carl, like, I haven't hung out and been doing as many things, but I was in the homebrew community and beer judging, which is just like a bunch of people who like to drink, which is another subculture. But it's like extremely diverse, like all over the country. You could just like show up, judge some beer, and you have like shorthand, not just like we all have shorthand, just vocabulary, and we could just jump in. I could just show up at a beer judging thing and like kind of just fit right in. So I think it's important to have people outside of it, because if we're just talking to each other about like, hey, we should spend more money and be like more values based, like that doesn't land in, it doesn't land everywhere, right? People are like, what are you even talking about? Mm-hmm. This is crazy. We're like, I have no idea how much a, whatever the first class or business class seats to Japan would cost. But if you brought it up with just like random people, they'd be like, yeah, that's insanely expensive. Yeah. What are you even talking about? So, but we're like, do it. Just go for it.
A couple of examples in our community is that the community heavily incentivizes success stories, right? We hear about the Fat Fire, and these forums are filled with victory laps of all these people hitting their numbers or, you know, retiring at 35. And I see this in our local groups too. Like, you hear the people always say, like, man, I feel so far behind. I'm like, well, you're just hearing the really good stories. Like the people who are in the messy middle or just starting out on their journey, you're not really hearing from them. You have to remember, it's like, I work in the news business. There's this expression, if it bleeds, it leads. Like, you hear all the bad stuff, so you just assume everything is bad. But it's like, you don't hear the 999 murders that didn't happen that day, right? So we end up with these blind spots. Failures, like failed-fi, I guess. People that go back to work due to maybe sequence of returns risk, or maybe they have this severe identity crisis when they quit. Maybe they get depression or something, they go back to work. You don't really hear those stories a whole lot. I think they might be out there. I feel like I saw an article come up in my feed recently about that, but you don't hear about that very often. And this ends up creating a skewed data pool where people seek out blogs and calculators that validate your math while ignoring sort of the messy reality of long-term lifestyle execution. Mm-hmm. Like, do you see failure stories?
No, I don't think so. I mean, a mutual friend of ours kind of went back to work, but it was kind of like a fun job for a friend on a very limited basis. I don't think I know anyone in my,
like, my feed, my Google feed. I swear your all's faces like pop up all the time. I'm like, oh, look, they wrote a story about my friend. Oh, look, and it's all like all these success five stories, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't ever see anything negative.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I have an interview coming up of a couple that went back to work. And so I won't spoil anything, but there's one coming up. But yeah, a lot of people have been like, do you have any stories about folks going back to work, or it didn't work out, they didn't save enough kind of thing? But it turns out people don't want to talk about when they fuck up.
Right.
So they are less likely to reach out and say like, hey, this didn't work out. Some are out there. A lot of people are like pretty conservative and they oversave, but it does happen, but we just don't hear about it. So it is, I mean, it's literally defining our echo chamber effect and confirmation bias. You don't see any stories because you're not looking for like, hey, did anyone have to go back to work?
Yeah. I mean, it is our lives too. Like, you two, we go on trips with each other now. Like, I've been on more trips with my five friends than my actual like extended family recently.
Because it's amazing.
Yeah. Less drama too.
Right?
Yeah, so Amberly, again, you're another community builder. So what are your observations?
I do think we live in an echo chamber. And I also, to your point of how you're loving it, I also want to say right now. So I think we all go through times in our lives where we're really into something, really into travel, really into a group of people. But I'd also be curious to see in 4 years from now, who are you connecting with in the Phi community?
That's fair.
Who are you as a person? And when I joined the Phi community 6.5 years ago, I've always been me in that frugalness and whatever. But I noticed that a lot of people in the Phi community were way too heady, right? It was all spreadsheet talk. It was all this stuff. And that was really cool and very interesting. But in my head, I was like, if I'm going to have any influence on this community, then the influence I want to have is for everyone to like have more fun, have more curiosity and adventure outside of their spreadsheets. That was literally my goal. Like, that was part of like what FinTalks was, like the community of FinTalks. And that's why the subgroup of FinTalks within the Phi community is a very specific one, but I wanted to have everyone have a little bit more fun and curiosity outside of the numbers. And then I have my next goal for the FI community, which is that personal development. Because I think everyone's traveling and going about and doing all these really cool things now, but I think that we still need to start working on ourselves. And part of that, again, so I'd just be curious to see where this all evolves in a few more years and what little influences do maybe break their way into the echo chamber to change us as a community. And I'm excited to see that. I will also say that when I was recently interviewed by Business Insider, I actually talked about how I felt like I was failing FI. And I wanted to be very honest with that because I thought it was very important to have a story out there with someone who's like, I built this real estate stuff. I was making a ton of money on real estate. I technically could have retired in October of 2023. That was my, like, I had enough for my life. And then my life changed. And I didn't anticipate having to take care of a father. I did not anticipate having a husband who wasn't going to work because of visa issues. I didn't anticipate having two children and then being the breadwinner. And all of a sudden, my life was like, oh, I can do this thing. But now, and then it being that all being too much, so going from long-term to short-term. So I went from $6,500 a month in rental income to $3,000 and exponential expenses. And so I was very honest with that in my article so that I could show people that this is a journey and we need to like go on that journey. So I agree that I don't think I hear a lot of failure stories, but I think we should be more honest with our failures within the community so that other people can feel more confident and comfortable speaking about theirs. And also maybe we're just not a bunch of failures. And if I may speak to the last thing to have a thought, is that I have a lot of friends outside the FI community and I love them. These people I have cultivated for years. I've met them traveling. I just like, they are the best. And it's really nice to be able to, and I speak openly about everything. So I know like a lot of reasons why we all connect is not necessarily because we're all the same values and people. It's that we can speak about something that's really difficult. And that actually just makes us feel closer to each other, right? And so one of the ways I feel closest to my travel friends, right? The people I've met throughout my travels and things like that. And I recently went to Mexico City after being in Longmont for 2.5 years. And we went to Mexico City. And I thought it was so fun, and everyone cover your ears, please, refreshing to be in an entirely different community. And that community in Mexico City is mostly expats who are very entrepreneurial. I'm entrepreneurial. So to connect with people on like that level, which had nothing to do with finances, but almost to like a very vulnerable, curious, business-oriented, what are you doing next? Like, it was so fun to be in that environment, and that like made me, oh, wow, there is something I'm missing fully from this community that I want to seek out elsewhere because I love us and I love something more that's feeding another part of my life.
Would you challenge us then? What do you think? How would you encourage me or would you to change my ways or thoughts about all of this?
I think you're on a new adventure right now.
Yeah.
And I think that adventure started 1.5 years ago and I would just encourage you to continue on that adventure. And I would also encourage you not to get stuck that you are just planning trips for everyone and you go on them because that is fun for right now, but it does become a job at some point. And so you have to decide at some time, do you want to continue doing this job or do you maybe want to do something else?
Right.
And I would suspect that at some point you will get stuck and you'll probably spend too much time in the job before breaking out, right? And it will just be like all of us, but in a whole different context.
Yeah.
And so that would be my like thoughts. And at this time, I wouldn't challenge you, except for maybe to start thinking about what do you actually want in the future? This is fun, but would this be fulfilling all the time moving forward?
Yeah, I do not know.
I have some thoughts for you actually, but we'll talk. I literally had this epiphany this morning and I was like, oh, I should talk to you about this, but it's something else.
Yeah, right now I'm very cognizant of the fact that if I took on maybe right now I'm doing 3 trips a year and I feel like if I did 4, it would put me over this limit to where it went from maybe being fun because it's fun right now to feeling more like work. And I'm trying to avoid that, but also at some point, maybe I've got 10, 12, I don't know, 20 trips under my belt. Maybe just because there's so many, maybe then it starts to feel like work. But right now, it just feels like fun, which is why it brings me all the joy, right?
Yes.
So I don't know. I might wake up tomorrow and feel differently. I'm just kind of figuring it out as I go. It's all a big experiment, I suppose.
And I think that's part of the fun.
Yeah.
Is you are trying on an entirely new hat and a new person. that you were like, you're experimenting right now. And I think that is part of like the core-ness of being a person, is to like try something new and experiment, whether that's going to work or doing a job or starting a podcast or just meeting someone new at Camp Phi or going to Camp Phi in itself. That is like fun and exciting. And I think that's why, like, I have nothing for you at this moment.
Okay.
I mean, I have an idea. Okay. But it's not related to what your specific question is. But then I would say that I can see a path where this actually wouldn't be fulfilling, and you'll feel stuck in it because you are this person to these people.
Yeah. I think it's important too, and this is something I feel like it's in this community where I've been hearing this lately. Sort of like, if you decide that, you know, you're this person and this is what you're going to do now, if it doesn't work out, that's okay.
Yes.
You can change your mind. You can do something different, mm-hmm. right? So I'm giving myself that grace to know that if I do decide this doesn't work anymore, that'll be okay.
Yeah.
But right now I'm loving it and it's good. Yeah. So more trips to come.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
All right. I think we're right at the bottom of the hour, so this is perfect. Carl, you have a blog. Where can people find you?
1500days.com, or come to Longmont and visit all of us at the Phi Collective, or at least 3 out of 4 of us are there semi-frequently. Kristen, are you coming to our big Christmas party? Or?
That's funny that you say that, because my roommate here at camp said, did you know they have a Christmas party in Longmont? She's like, we should totally go to that. And I was like, I did know that. Maybe we will. Yeah. So thank you for the invitation.
Wow. What instrument do you play?
Oh, you don't want me to play any instruments. I actually started taking piano lessons when I was like 9, but that was many, many, many moons ago.
Okay. You have 5 months to get good at something.
Yeah. We had one of those washboard things when I was a kid. Maybe I could.
Yeah.
That's pretty hard to mess up, right? Do
you
even know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're saying. Yes, okay. I support this. I want to see it.
I'll be able to dig that out.
Yeah.
And then Kristen, where can people find you?
FiFriendsTravel.com. And you can subscribe. I promise I won't spam you, but you'll know when trips are launching, because lately they've tended to sell out pretty quickly. You'll know in advance where we're going, when we're going, when it goes on sale. And we're taking a group of 46 to Tanzania in October, spread out over 2 weeks. We've got Japan coming up next May, which Carl referenced. I'm getting ready to launch Iceland in August for next August 2027. And then in October, I'll be launching Croatia for October 2027.
Cool. So the Iceland is the next one coming up where people could actually like
sign
it's
up.
It's not filled up.
Yeah, I've got a wait list going for Japan because it sold out so quickly. So if you can join that, yeah, I'll be launching Iceland sometime in August. That date is TBD, so stay tuned.
Cool. Where can people find you, Amberly?
Amberly Therapy. No, I'm just joking. AmberlyGrant.com. I also do trips, and so we have some cruises coming up in January. We have Icon of the Seas. If you've got family, I'd love for you to join my family on it for a five family friendly event. Right after that is Celebrity of the Seas on January 24th, where we are just going to go and hit up St. Martin, St. Thomas, and a few other places on a celebrity cruise, which is a little high end, a little hoity-toity. We do have Italy, though I do suspect that there won't be much space available in it, and so I rent a house. This is Carl and I had talked about this many moons ago, and I committed, I think, on the Mile High Fi podcast to rent a castle in Scotland, which I did last year, and it was amazing. And so we're recreating the entire experience in Italy, where we rent a house. It's like, you know, a bunch of bedrooms. This one is overlooking Lake Montepulciano, so it'll be very cool on the Tuscany-Umbria border. And then lastly, if you want to go big or go home, join us in Antarctica. I have pricing available until September 23rd. We already have essentially 24 cabins sold on that one. And so it's going to be a once in a lifetime experience. And it's not as expensive as you think.
All right. And you can find me at Mile High Fi. Do have something new coming out. So Carl and I have been working kind of behind the scenes on a shake weight workout. So people are really into like zone 2 workout. So I've been working on that portion. And Carl has a two-handed, I don't know, it's like a zone 5 workout that you're working on. So
it's intense.
Stand by for that. We'll send out links for whenever our shake weight comes out. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Fi podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do 3 things for us. Number 1, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week.
All right. And we have, again, Carl's been coming back around, and he had a couple one-liner jokes that we're going to go over here. And I think, I don't know what order, but...
Well, they're not jokes. They're fire pickup lines.
They're fire pickup. Sorry, you intro this. Sorry.
Yeah, some of these were outsourced from the community, some of the people in the crowd. I will not say names, so if you're offended by any of them, don't look at us. Take a look back at yourselves. But these are... do we have any... single folks here, or people who are planning to be single soon? Maybe you can't agree. Okay, you want to take careful notes. We can send you the slides afterwards if you don't have a chance to record them.
All right. Yeah. Do you want to kick off the first one? I think this could be a really effective one.
Yeah. Yeah. So these are our best fire pickup lines. The first one: are you an index fund? Because I'm looking for long-term growth and a lifetime of low maintenance.
Not bad.
Well, the second one, it has to do with Napoleon Dynamite, yeah, if you've seen it.
Has anyone seen Napoleon Dynamite? Or?
In all honesty, like, okay. I've seen it, but it's been so long, it's I don't know that I get the joke.
This joke
but I'm
could
gonna,
fall flat.
It might. Yeah. So don't blame me.
It's always good to explain it beforehand.
That's yeah. So I see you're going by the 4% rule, but you could totally do 5%. Okay, who gets it? Yeah. Okay. One person. Okay. Two. Okay. Two.
Those are the best. Okay.
That was okay. You, Doug. Okay.
Mike, is that what? That's, again, we didn't write these. So, is your name VTSAX? Because I want to put all my assets into you.
Is this enough money to be FU money?
Next, you light my fire.
Is Chad Deschenko in the audience, or this one was inspired by him?
Okay. Oh, yeah, and I was going to say, well, I'll read this one. My Sprinter van or yours? Which, incidentally, I rented a van, and it's right out there, so come see me later.
Okay. And this is the very last one. Don't worry, I promise to safely withdraw.
That was good. And then, and kind of crazy, like, Kristen, you wrote that when you said
no,
that.
I did not. I did not. I was like, I am not reading that one.
I don't know. This is what the history of the document says. I don't know. All right.